Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
CXG believes in the visual art of storytelling, whether it's through film, video, live events, or podcasts just like this one. Our mission is to connect audiences through powerful, authentic stories that leave a lasting impact. CXG is proud to support the Litter Box because great stories deserve to be seen and heard. Learn more at cxgfilms.com.
You're listening to The Litter Box, a Detroit Tigers podcast with your hosts, Chet West and Bill Patterson. Here's what's on deck for this episode.
This is still the fourth youngest team in baseball, so the future's in front of them.
I'm here for the Polish in the shower in the back. Let's have a scoring orgy. That would be an incredible t-shirt.
Every time he bats, you know you're going to get a professional at bat.
Hey, and you make the All-Star game, I want to see you play in the All-Star game. Oh, my friend, do you smell that in the air? That is winning, is what that is. The Tigers did something a little different this past series than what they've done normally this season. They dropped the first game of the season of the series and won the second two, which is kind of an oddity for them. They typically don't do that. They usually win the first game of a series. They have all season long. This time, a little different. They also managed to win a game that they didn't score 8 runs in, regardless of what they gave up to the other team. So that's also an interesting factoid. What are your thoughts about the Twins, Bill? Do they still sit down in the cellar with you a little bit? More of a disappointment of a team?
Yeah, outside of Buxton, there just doesn't seem a lot there in any way, shape, or form. And after witnessing this team play for 3 games, he's the one Twin that I would love to have on our squad.
He's a special talent.
True five-tool player, despite the fact that he's hurt often. I've pulled up this nugget, which is awesome. You talk about winning the first game of the series, which that and then the Tigers running first to third or second to home seemed to be the secrets of the season. And then obviously having a huge stopgap in Tarik Skubal, which we'll get to in a minute. But that was the Tigers' first Saturday win since April 26th.
So that's bizarre.
It had been almost 2 full months since they had won on a Saturday, which is for you and I and many of our listeners, like prime viewing time, you know, sit back, relax, you know, finish the honeydews, whatever other activities, youth sports, adult sports we have, and then relax and watch the Tigers game, listen to Jason and Andy and Daniela, and it just hadn't happened. So it's good to see that. The other thing that I think we need to note and talk a little bit about is this is still the fourth youngest team in baseball. So the future's in front of them. And the only truly long-term albatross-style contract, albatross, you know, noose hanging around your neck, some weight on the shoulders, would be that of Javi Baez, which doesn't look as bad of a contract going forward. And quite frankly, some of the money that's being thrown around in Major League Baseball, his $24 million, it's nothing to sneeze at, please. But in all relative relativity. If his hip was really bothering him and now he's got a clean bill of health and this is the hobby that can that we're going to see, that's great. This is the seventh game, that would be Saturday's game, that the Tigers had four home runs, which ties all of last season. So those are kind of just my quick facts off the top. You know, Friday was frustrating. Anytime you lose 4-1, you just wish the bats had come a little more alive. Sawyer Gibson and Long pitched well, I thought, and he didn't really deserve to take an L or you know, not to have a victory.
Seems to happen, right? This season, it's like pitchers will pitch a great game and we'll just not get a run. We'll get a run, zero runs. And how many deserving wins have pitchers missed out on this season?
I mean, it seems
like a handful.
Yeah, it's when Jobe was healthy and pitching, it seemed like he, Mize, and Scooble get all the wins and all the run support. And it seems like Flaherty, SGL, and Reese Olson, can't wait for you to come back, were the victims of not getting great run support. So I chalk Friday up as one of those frustrating games because we're doing, you know, a series by series pod. That being said, it's just baseball. I mean, there's 162 games. You're going to lose some like this. Great part about this team that we also really need to highlight is they have not had a long losing streak this entire season. And I'm knocking on wood as I say that, but they rebound with a 10-5 win. Casey Mize was awesome. Tommy Cannelly, he might need to shave some more body hair. He was not so great. And then the four home runs, Carp hit a Carp bomb, Torres had a bomb, Riley Green, man, we go as he goes on offense. And then Z-Mac had another home run. Saturday was just pure joy and delight to watch. Probably top three Tigers games this season.
This is a scoring orgy. We had a scoring orgy.
I like that. I like that. That's a good way to phrase it.
Yeah, I figured you would. Why not?
Yeah. You do know you're paraphrasing from loyal listener Alexi Lalas, who talked about that as well when rule changes were made to via FIFA, that it would be a scoring orgy coming forward.
He used the term scoring orgy. That's
scoring
incredible.
Scoring orgy, yeah.
I think t-shirts might be in order.
All right, definitely, definitely.
Let's have a scoring orgy. And just
all
put,
right.
Yeah, right, right on the front.
Done.
What do you
think? I'm here for the Polish in the shower, scoring orgy. If that doesn't get questions,
you don't throw those together.
Will.
That you don't hear that together that often. That's great.
I mean, is that a front and back t-shirt or is it all on one
That's
side?
That's a front and back t-shirt. I'm here for the Polish in the shower on the back. Let's have a scoring orgy. That would be incredible t-shirt.
All right. I will get our merch guy.
Not
going to
pick
the
kids up at school in that one.
No. A matter of fact, that might be one that we just internet sale only. Hey,
probably.
I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
And this is just kind of a fun one, but it's on topic. So the first phase of All-Star voting occurred last Thursday, and we've got to give kudos where kudos are due.
Of course.
Gleyber Torres is the leading second baseman in the American League. I think that's 100% justified and a good kudo to a player that has not had, you know, that type of popularity or recognition thus far in his career.
Well, like you've been saying all season, he's a professional.
He is
a professional.
He puts
together professional at bats.
Every time.
I've had a lot of critique about his fielding and his base running, okay? But he's getting up there in the years. Like, there are certain things you're just not going to do as well in older age. And he's getting there. You know, he's going to see some drop off there. But he keeps that bat hot, doesn't he?
He keeps that bat hot, and he really doesn't give away an at bat. Every time he bats, you know you're going to get a professional at bat. And it's, I think this is a move that will not only pay dividends for the Tigers in the 2025 season, regardless whether Gleyber is a Tiger in the future or not. That's Scott Harris's decision. I'm Switzerland on that. I'm very impartial. I think we're getting the best that we're probably going to see from him. I think it trickles down throughout the organization. And given that we do have the fourth youngest lineup in all of baseball, you have to think that the younger guys are sitting there watching this time and time again, realizing this is what it takes to have a 10-year career or a long storied career in Major League Baseball.
Have you watched he and Baez communicate after at bats? They're usually about 1 to 2 spots apart in the lineup to one degree or the other.
I think they are friends.
I think they're bonding. They're kind of the old elder statesman on this team right now, which is so weird to say about a Javi Baez. But I think Gleyber's only been in the league about another year, maybe two more than Javi.
And Javi started young, and so did Gleyber.
Yeah, well, that's true. Actually, it'd be reverse. Javi's been a year or two longer than Gleyber. My bad. But I got him flipped around there. But have you watched when Javi finishes an at-bat or when he finishes an at-bat, there's usually some sort of a signal or conference of some sort.
Yes.
Javi will start talking about the pitches and, you know, and Gleyber starts talking about the – that's two veteran guys who want to keep their craft elevated to where it is so they can stay in the game for a little longer, but they're helping each other out. I guarantee you the rest of the team watches that. And these young guys are watching that.
Absolutely.
So they're feeding off of that. And like you said, I think Gleyber being on the team is nothing but a healthy positive for the most part, especially for the young guys.
And then let's talk about Riley Green getting a ton of votes. He was not going to overtake Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge, A, plays in the biggest media market in the U.S., if not the world. B, he's a New York Yankee. If he were a Met, there might be a fighting chance, but he's a Yankee. The Yankees are royalty in Major League Baseball.
And Judge is doing some stuff that...
And he's doing things this season. Look, I don't think we've seen this type of hitting performance since Barry Bonds in his heyday, say 2002.
Yeah.
2001. So my question is this. Javi Baez also made the cut as an outfielder.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, where, if he does make the final cut, should Javi play in this year's All-Star game in Atlanta?
I'll tell you what. I don't know that Javi Baez makes the cut as an infielder in All-Star voting. I don't know. I don't even know if we're talking about him right now if he never played outfield this year. I mean, we may be saying, hey, this is nice to see how, but do you remember how good he was in the outfield? When we needed a bat, we needed a guy in the outfield. He played center field as well as anybody I've seen play center field over the last couple seasons.
Yes.
He could easily be an all-star outfielder in my book.
So, yes, I do remember, and I'm still picturing a few of the catches he made in that Padres season, or series, that I just thought were exceptional for any center fielder in Major League Baseball.
It's almost like people are laughing about it. Like, is he that good? Is he just
He's
this
that
athletic?
Good.
Is he that good?
So I would love to see him get at least one at bat if he does make it. You know, face one batter in center field and then get one in the infield somewhere. But I think it would be a lot more fun to see him play in the outfield for this. So let's change topics on this. So I've done a little bit of a 180 degrees on this. After last night's Sunday Night Baseball, complete and total dominance by Tarek Skubal.
Yeah.
Those that listen to the podcast, I know you're already tuning into this. If you're new to the pod, thank you. Welcome to the Litter Box, Chet, and I appreciate you. If you cannot set your calendar around Skubal starts, start DVRing, recording, doing whatever you can, because each one we're watching, history being made. And the Tigers are one of the original eight American League franchises. They have a long history of exceptional pitching. They have a great recent history, maybe not the last 10 years, but going back to going back to Justin Verlander and going to Max Scherzer, David Price for a brief moment. And before that, Dan Petrie and Jack Morris and Willie Hernandez. And before that, Denny McClain. Anyhow, where I'm going is he's doing things that those guys didn't do. And for that, I just tip my cap. It's amazing. I am no longer worried about what happens, whether he's a Tiger long term or whether we trade him at the end of next season.
I 100% agree. I have a question for you before we go on any further down the path here.
Great. I've got one for you, too.
Have you identified a favorite pitch that you love watching him throw?
His changeup is
The one for
is
you.
Is that yours?
No, it's not. It's going to be a pitch that might set that changeup up, though. I love when he goes up and into a righty hitter.
Yeah, yeah.
And just paints that upper inside corner with 100 miles an hour. You can't get a bat around on that if you're a righty. And if that in a lefty-righty matchup, that's like the great equalizer. I mean, the changeup's the out pitch, right? But you get that peppered in your underneath your chin there, and you're going, what the heck was that? You're not getting a bat around on it.
No. And I think if I could pitch or pick a pitch sequence for him, it would be change up, that high inside fastball. Just to see three pitches, because his location's so great on the changeup. And then throwing over 100 miles an hour up and in like that is just, it's
just lethal.
Diabolical. So my question to you is this. Last night, I sat and watched and said to myself, we're witnessing history. I will make one comment that you and I have talked about offline. ESPN's really gone downhill on their Sunday night baseball broadcast.
They have devalued the product quite a bit over the last couple of years. They've done away with some of the stalwarts. I don't know what it is about that broadcast that it just seems so vanilla.
I learned nothing last night. Now, mind you, I'm paying more attention than I have probably since 1984, 1987. That being said, I still learned nothing. And
it's not the broadcast it once was.
No, and it's not even Benetti and Dirks or Benetti and Peaches. I mean,
Benetti and Dirks is 10 times more entertaining.
Yeah, yeah.
Than that buttoned up stuff we got last night.
Oh. Just terrible. Hey, Tiger fans. You know what's more frustrating than a bases loaded double play? When your small business is striking out with technology problems. That's why our good buddy, Brett Danis, created Summit Tech Partners. Brett's a Michigan guy through and through and a lifelong Tigers fan. And Summit provides the perfect relief pitcher for your IT needs. While other services throw you generic fastballs, Brett's team will scout your business and develop a customized game plan specifically for your small business.
While you're keeping track of ERA and RBIs, Brett's team will handle your IT infrastructure. His team will monitor your systems like a hawk-eyed umpire, catching problems before they become major league disasters. Summit has a full roster of IT services that'll keep your business safe and running smoothly, so you can spend less time troubleshooting and more time watching torque bombs.
Visit homerun.support today for your free consultation.
Summit Tech Partners, where your small business is always the MVP.
So my question to you is, I am now okay because I somewhat reverted to my 8-year-old Billy Patterson self and thought, how cool would it be for Tiger fans of younger ages to watch Scooble start the All-Star game? And it didn't happen last year, even though it could have, maybe should have. That's a debate for somebody else's pod. We've already kind of covered it. But I really did 180 degrees on it, Chet, and thought, we're witnessing history. Let's let it happen, even if we have to sacrifice a start, which is what's going to happen on down the line, which could mean a loss, which, you know, I don't like, and I'm sure you don't like. But that's my take on it. I'm asking you the same question. How do you feel?
You know, I'm split between being the traditionalist of, hey, you make the All-Star game, I want to see you play in the All-Star game. Don't avoid it. Don't sit it out. You know, you're an All-Star. You got voted in. Give the fans what they want. And the new age fuddy-duddy of, oh, why would you waste his arm on a stupid game that means nothing? You know what? It doesn't mean nothing. A, it does have consequences on home field advantage for the postseason for World Series. B,
which it's... Can we talk about that?
Yeah,
The Tigers, it could matter. Last year, it didn't matter whether he started or not, because last year, the Tigers were 12 games out at that point.
I want to see him throw. Let him have his inning. Start the game.
Yeah.
Get an inning under his belt. It's not going to tax him that much. If he gets hurt, you get killed walking your doggy, as De Niro said, or Pacino said in the movie Heat. There's a zillion things that could happen to him to injure him along the way. I'm not that worried about it.
You just basically confused Pacino and De Niro.
I did. They were in the same movie, though.
They're always in the same movie. It's easy to do. But that being said, one of them is a loyal listener, one is not. And you've probably deeply offended the one that listens. So
I don't think either one of them are loyal listeners of this podcast. If you guys are out there, drop us a message. We'd be happy to answer any of your questions, De Niro and Pacino. But I don't think either one of you care about what we have to say twice a week.
I'm picturing Pacino in a son of a woman, you know, when he goes on his diatribe, kind of his soapbox. I'm picturing him doing that to you, being like, that was De Niro. That wasn't me.
So at any rate, it was Pacino who says it, though. It was Pacino who says it. Back to baseball. So I want to touch on game one here, Bill. Let's kind of go through the list, if you don't mind. Because I had a few things I was picking out along the way that bothered me a little bit. And I wanted to bring them up. Not a lot of stuff this weekend bothered me, but in game one, I started going a little south because you got Kerry Carpenter going 0-for-2. Jermai Jones and Zach McKinstry pinch hit for him. And I'm sitting there thinking, when are we going to figure Carpenter out? When are we going to do what we need to do with Carpenter? Apparently, he's turned back to Jesus and he's hitting the ball again. That's great. I love to hear that for him. I'm glad that he's hitting the ball again. Whatever gets the ball off the bat into the field in fair play, by all means, do it. Riley Green went 0-for-4 in that game. And I was literally going into this game thinking, man, Riley's really picking it back up. What I'm trying to say, and Torque had a hit, and Dingler had a hit, Dingler keeps hitting, yada, yada, yada. Gibson Long had a great start. We didn't have the bullpen starter in this game, which I thought we were going to get. Thank you for letting Sawyer Gibson Long play like a starter and start the damn game. 3 hits, 2 walks, 5 Ks. He put together a decent effort, gave up a dinger. What I started to realize after this game, and that by the end of the series, if we're going to hang on every loss in a baseball season, how many games are you going to lose? At least 60, right? Typically, if you have a great season, yeah, 60 times you're going to come away angry. Name me another sport where the percentages are that high and your team's going to be dominant still, which is crazy. So we're going to lose 60 games.
Another sport where if you get a hit 1 out of 3 times, you're pretty much a Hall of Famer.
I enjoyed putting this game in the rearview mirror and watching Saturday's game and being all's right with the world again. And then, of course, last night, the dominant performance that you kind of went over with Skubal. We got enough runs to win the game. Probably the first time we don't win a game without scoring 8, like I said in the intro. At the end of this series, I come away absolutely delighted with the outcome, even though we lost the first game. But after that first game, I was in a sea of dread. I got to learn to just not carry the dread around with us when we lose one damn game. That's just not worth it. Baseball, there's too much happening, too much going on. 162 chances to disappoint or thrill your fan base. Got to look at it as a whole. And you look at that series, you take 2 out of 3, you're happy. You get out of there against a division foe and you increase your lead in the standings. That's all. Just a little thing I was thinking about last night after that game and thinking to myself how silly I was for getting so down for losing one game. That's it.
All right.
Carry on.
All right. I respect that. Let's talk about just the Tigers overall. 53-32 with a .624 winning percentage. That puts them on pace for 102 wins, which you teed that up very nicely for
great.
Me when you talked about.
102 would be
great. Yeah. 5-5 their last 10. They've won 2. Their run differential is now plus +99, which is second in the American League only to the New York Yankees, plus +113. I am anxiously awaiting the next series against the Yankees. I think it's going to be must-see TV. And
could be a doozy if we can get Reese back. Absolutely. If we can get another pitcher back and throw some stuff at him, I'd be pretty excited for that one.
So let's talk about the next series. The Tigers are going to be sweating profusely in the humidity of Washington, D.C., going up against the Washington Nationals, who are 35-49 right now. They're in the cellar in the National League East, which is, I don't think, where they were quite expecting to be. I think they thought they were solidly in fourth, but the Marlins have won 7 in a row, where the Nats have just won 1. They're 5-5 in their last 10, and the run differential is pretty god awful. It's negative -68 at this point. So going into the series, I'll review the pitching matchups here in just a moment. But overall, I'm feeling pretty confident that the Tigers can go to DC and probably get a series win. I don't ever think of a sweep. It's just too difficult. It proved too difficult even against the White Sox, you know, in that 4-game set.
Sure.
You know, so Flaherty's taking the bump on tomorrow night, and he is going up against Trevor Williams, who is a right-handed thrower. He's a big guy, 6'3", 231. He's not off to the best start this year. He's 3-9. You know, records are records. But more importantly, his ERA is 5.65, which is terrible. When he is on, he throws heat and can get swing and miss. He's got 61 strikeouts on the year, and his whip is 1.47. So I fully expect the Tigers to be able to put 4 runs or more up against him. The Nationals have a bullpen with a couple guys, but overall, the bullpen doesn't really scare you. So that's my prediction for Game 1, if you would. Fast forwarding, let's take a look at Game 2. And I know you just, you know, did an emotional reveal, you know, if we were on like a Love Island or something like that, when you talked about your despair Friday night.
Yeah.
Well, Chet, I hate to do this to you, but the pitcher is undecided right now for Wednesday.
And we're going to probably be going up against Mackenzie Gore, who's probably about as good as they have. So,
yeah, even though he's only 3-8, 3.09 ERA.
He's got stuff. And then he gives up the deep ball. He gives up the long ball once in a while, but he's got stuff.
His strikeouts are awesome. Yeah. 129, and his whip is good, 1.20. So, unfortunately, I understand where AJ's at. If they lose a game, this is probably the game they lose because, A, you're up against their best starter, and, B, we're undecided if we even have a starter. Reese Olson, we'd love to see you back. I know you listen to the pod, so we're giving you encouragement right here, Reese.
So, let me tell you where I stand with this series. This is going to be a mirror image in a lot of ways of the A's series.
Okay.
The Nationals have a very young, athletic group of players. They got James Wood, who's probably hotter than the surface of the sun right now.
He was walked four times deliberately yesterday.
First time since somebody you mentioned earlier in the podcast.
Barry Bonds.
First time since 2004, Barry Bonds.
My favorite player of all time.
Absolutely crazy. But James Wood is hot. He'll do damage. You just let him do the damage and hope the rest don't. CJ Abrams, another very skilled player. Brady House is a young guy they just called up. Not quite rounding into form yet, but could do some damage. So you've got some guys in this lineup that you're going to have to be careful with, just like the A's lineup. Young, power, good athletes. Pitching, Mackenzie Gore is about the biggest thing you're going to run into. Jake Irvin's not bad. He'll be in game three.
Yeah.
But Mackenzie Gore is kind of their young lights out guy that I'm worried about. Trevor Williams, not worried about him in game one. Gore will be game two. Jake Irvin will probably be game three. So again, the pitching, if we can get to it, I'm not worried about the pitching. It's the hitting, and we just got to keep the ball in the yard, basically.
Yeah. So one other news and notes, fire up chips. Dietrich Enns is getting his second start.
Is he going to get his second start? He deserves another start. He did quite well in that first one.
So it is imperative that the Tigers take game one because if they lose game one, this could be a sweep in the opposite direction if things don't go their way.
I'm guessing they're going to be some pretty high scoring games one way or the other.
Yeah. And then my favorite thing for our listeners to tune into is Benetti, and I don't know if it's Dierks or Peaches yet, complaining. And you're going to hear very subtle complaints about the press box and how far removed it is at Nationals Park. And anytime you listen to any broadcast for the visiting team, that's all they can do is bellyache about how they feel like they climbed a mountain and can't see anything. And so they will have spotters on the field helping them. The producers will help them because apparently it is one of, if not the worst ballparks from a press box location standpoint.
Do you have any food thoughts for this one?
I've got a great story for you.
I mean, let me just, you know, like I like to do, I like to kind of take a look and see what we've got over there. They've got a very, how should I say this, German feel to some of their dishes. But they're kind of all over the place. I mean, they've got a hot dog and fries, spelled H-A-U-T-E, and they've got Swizzler, whatever the heck that is. But then, of course, they'll have Chesapeake Crab Cake Company in one section, and we've got some, it looks like some Mexican offerings, Los Cinco Tacos. They're kind of all over the place. Korean corn dogs? Who knew?
It's like,
I didn't know there were Korean corn dogs.
But they're the best corn dogs in the world. You need to go to a K-Dog place immediately and try one.
Is K-Dog like K-pop? I didn't know we had K-Dogs. I didn't even know they were a thing.
Go to Kong Dogs. I guarantee there's
Kong
one.
Kong Dogs.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you'll friggin' love it.
That's really close to something else. But all right, Kong Dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
fantastic.
It's How a chain.
You, give me your story. Let's do your story. We can,
okay, it has
we
nothing
can leave
to do
people
with
this.
Nothing to do with Korean food. So okay. I've only been to the stadium one time. It was the year it opened. And D.C. deserves to have sports within D.C., not out in the nether swamps of Maryland or Virginia, where some of the other teams play. And so that's about where the highlight ends. The development in and around the ballpark has been steadily increasing, but I vowed never to go back after my first time for this experience. I took my grandparents, my cousins, my aunt, my parents, and my sister, and I guess Jackie probably would have been with us as well, and probably my brother-in-law, Brett. So we had a pretty good gaggle of people. I want to say there was like 10 or 12 of us. And as gentlemen do, my cousin got the seat, so I, you know, put my card down and said,
You bought the beer and the food.
The woman helping us rang me up and then quit because she got in a tiff with her manager. And I sat there until the third inning waiting for somebody to pour the rest of our beers. Because I think we
rang you up and just left the booth.
Yeah. And we had our hot dogs.
I mean, that's one way to do it.
Popcorn and Cracker Jack. We had our Old Bay seasoning on everything. The food was fine, but the problem was we had nothing to wash it down with. And this woman literally quit and nobody seemingly could help me. I did email and call the Nationals and received nothing.
Nothing back?
Nothing. My cousin did the same. He got nothing. And basically, we both aren't really supporters.
How do you abandon someone at the beer trough? How does that happen?
And it was like a pretty hefty bill. I mean, like I ordered 20 beers, you know, like 10 dogs.
20 beers, jeez.
Well, two per person. I mean, the best part, though, we get to our seats and guess who my next door neighbor is? Alan Greenspan.
No, really?
Yeah.
I got to believe that spotting politicians at these games is probably a regular affair.
Guess who keeps score? Alan
Greenspan?
Yeah.
Is he a scorekeeper?
Yeah,
that just fits. I don't know why that just completely fits.
And he let me cheat off his scorecard so I could fill mine out since I was dealing with the beer debacle.
That's a great story about their inability to service people at the National Stadium. The whole place sounds a little bit like a disaster. You say the area is building up, though. I don't know that I could recommend going there. I've never been to a game there. I don't see a reason as to why I'm going to be going to a game there anytime soon. Rarely in the area.
There's so much else to do there.
What I want to take away from this is we learned that there is such a thing as Korean corn dogs today. And that's amazing.
And you are going to get Kong dogs for you and your girls one night for takeout. And you're going to report back after the National Series.
Hey, girls, we're going to get Kong dogs. Make sure you say it right. That's, you know, okay. Well, we learn something new every day. Bill, I am looking forward to the series regardless. I can't wait to see James Wood play, actually. Can't wait to see how we handle him. He's going to be a dynamic young player. Anything else you're looking for?
No. I mean, if the Tigers can win the series, I would consider it a monumental victory. I mean, just given
two out of
that,
three gets you home, right?
And we don't have Scooble, and we've got a to be determined. Yep. And not to mention that Dieter Enns.
Fingers crossed for no bullpen starters.
Yeah. I mean, Flaherty.
It's really all I want.
If I told you going into a series that the Tigers would be in first place comfortably and that we were expecting to take two out of three with Jack Flaherty and Dieter Enns being your two.
Dietrich, not Dieter. Dieter is from Sprockets.
Well, no, he orders hot dogs.
Hot dogs, yeah. Dietrich may order them too.
D Enns. All right, that's it. I've got nothing more.
Listeners, thanks for joining us for this gaggle of wonderment. We'll be back at the end of the Nationals series to give you our thoughts on Dieter and the rest of the gang and give a little preview to the upcoming series. Enjoy the games in Washington. If you're going to the game, let us know how the food is. We'll talk to you all later. Thanks again.